get lost in your words. It feels so good when I'm hurt. Take my mind off of the pain. Love when the beat takes me away. It's only good music. Oh, oh, with only good music. Something about the things you said stays in my mind. Makes me wanna sit down and listen to you. I listen all night. The melody, the arrangement makes my body go so crazy. I tie my feet, man, I love the beat. It's the way the music comes over me. The emotions I get, I won't fight. Sometimes the music is sure to make you cry, then dry your eyes. You know when the music is the way you can hide for life. I get lost in your words. It feels so good when I'm hurt. Take my mind off of the pain. Love when the beat takes me away. It's only good music. Oh, 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 with only good music.
I tell Rihanna, please don't stop the music. Cologne strum my pain with the fingers. I could really use it. Quiet storms full of purple rain. My Sharia more lovely as a summer day. I'll let the whispers follow Marvin Gaye. In my headphones till the music starts to fade away. I give away my brown sugar for a bit of pop. If love really was a bullet, I'd have took the shot. Yeah. Now would you buy me a drink just to take me home? Put your game in a song just to make me moan. I like my Robin Thicke, me alone. A thug album, triple shots, that's a trace.
I get lost in your words. It feels so good when I'm hurt. Take my mind off of the pain. Love.
Hello, hello, and good evening. Welcome to each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining me here this evening on Healing Through Hurt, iTalk Radio. As you know, I'm your host, C. Maria Wall, the Shero at your ground zero, a.k.a. the mediator. And as you know, April is Authors Month. And for those of you who have been asking for it, you're going to get something special. Now, you know the name of the show is Healing Through Hurt, of course, and a lot of times we deal with healing and hurt. But during Authors Month, I welcome authors from different genres, different writing styles, poets, sci-fi, it doesn't matter. It's to promote authors out here, emerging and established authors as well. Well, tonight, we are really going to do something different. I'll be welcoming two male authors to the show. So let me just give you a little bit of a tidbit of what's in store for you this evening. Tonight we have Keith B. Davis and Daniel Harshaw. Now, Keith B. Davis is a prolific writer and author of a host of sexy short stories and novels. His first book, Insight to One's Soul, was published in 2003. So join me as we delve into his current book, Confessions of a Reformed Player, by way of 10 short stories. This will take you into the lives of men who were confused about how to act in a relationship in this world that glamorizes thug life versus being a gentleman. And let's take it a step further with Daniel Harshaw. Money, power, and respect are the three things that Frank and Mike most desired, more than anything in life. Hustling in the streets was the only way they knew how to get it. And brotherhood is what they stood on being straight from the streets of Detroit. Having no money was like being homeless. And can you imagine the luxury cars, designer clothes, and mansions yet no one could fathom the amount of money they were receiving. Mike and Frank finally turned their dream into not a multi-million dollar, but a multi-billion dollar business, according to the DEA, that is. Mike and Frank were distributing 50 kilos of cocaine and grossing over $700,000 a month, not including the businesses that were being bought by the drug money. Bulletproof Love takes us on the journey of these two men through the streets of Detroit. It will show the rise and fall of the group that many had come to know as the Moet Boys, which means money over everything. Money over everything. So, you know, we're in for a treat this evening. I'm going to bring both of the gentlemen on just to say hello, and then we're going to jump right into the show, because Lord knows I can't wait. I know that so many of you have been waiting for this as well. So let's get ready. Gentlemen, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hello, how you doing?
I am so glad to have you here this evening. We're going to start, as I said, I spoke with you both briefly before the show, but we're going to start with Mr. Davis, and then we're going to pull up the rear with those brothers who decided to live their dream on the edge. So right now, Mr. Harshaw, we will be joining you in a few moments, but sit tight, and at any given point in time, if you'd like to join in, feel free. I'll leave you unmuted so you can mute your phone on your end, and if you'd like to interject, feel free to do so. But right now, we're going to welcome Keith B. Davis to Healing Through Hurt.
Yes, how are you doing? It's good to be on your show.
How are you doing?
Well, I just want to speak about Confessions of a Reform Player. Actually, it's a work, as everything is a work in progress, but, you know, because you live your life and you date, and, you know, it's kind of my story and my friends' stories, all collectively, and it's a pretty interesting story because you find out who you really are and what you want to be. Because you see different men do different things, and it's a kind of contrast between what your mother told you and what your mother taught you how to be a gentleman,
right,
and what it is out in the streets. And it was kind of a contrast because what your mother taught you has nothing to do with being out in the streets. And, you know, and I was kind of, and that's basically my story and my friend's story, because I was totally confused on, okay, I'm a gentleman, supposed to treat women this way, but the men that were getting all the beautiful women was nothing in no way like that. And it
right.
was kind of hard for, and it was kind of hard for me to really reconcile with that. And it was a kind of a struggle. So I wrote this book basically to, like, for the young boys out there who's going through it, my sons, my cousins, my nieces, or maybe my nephews. It's for women, too, because it kind of like get very caught up in what kind of dude do I want? What kind of dude is going to be there for me for the duration or for a moment, you know, because it's kind of difficult out there.
Right. And I noticed that you said that you wrote it for the young people, but let me say this. I know a lot of women in my age group, and I'm older, and so many of them say they want that thug type. They don't want a ride-or-die guy. They want that thug type, and I fail to see the infatuation, but for some reason, I believe that it's a generational thing at this point where a lot of women are attracted to that bad boy image for whatever reason. So I believe that, you know, your book is beneficial to everyone, not just the young people, because if you notice what's going on in society nowadays, it's almost like it's a huge generational curse, and we keep repeating the same mistakes all over and over again from one generation to the next. And the problem is that I'm finding out is that there's a lot of women out here who don't want to embrace their aging process. They do not want to let go of their youth. So between them having sons and some of them try to coddle their sons and keep them home with them to get them that missing piece in their lives, that the young ladies don't have any role models and the young men don't have any role models, but in the same breath, those who should be their role models are not role models themselves because they in turn don't know how to be that role model because they don't know themselves. So your book actually, in my opinion, is something that everyone can benefit from at this point. So,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
I can agree with
tell
that.
Us a little bit about, now I know you said it was the lives of you and your friends, but share. And for those of you, welcome to all of you. I see you coming into the call query. Of course, if you'd like to be on air, you have a question or a comment for any of our authors tonight, just press the number 1 on your phone, and that will alert me that you'd like to be on air. And it will also put you at the top of the query list, and I'll know to bring you on. Welcome to our guest coming in the chat room. Last night, the chat room was having some serious glitches. I don't know if it's working well tonight, but hopefully it is. And again, our number is 646-478-4726. Press the number 1 to be on your phone. Blast this to your friends. This is our time tonight. We started the show with good music by Tori Lee. Now we're talking about good reads and good conversation. And very seldom do I have two male authors on in one night, and they're going to bring it rough and real. So, ladies, prepare. This isn't a male bashing contest. You call and you decide you want to go down that road, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang up on you because it's my show and I can do that. So we're just going to keep it cerebral, but keep it real because these are real life issues. So with that said, so tell me a little bit about what really influenced you, your personal experiences out there in the world. And if you can give some examples, that would be great.
Okay. I could do that. All right. I can remember as far as back as my first relationship with an older woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 19. She was about 28. And, you know, we met and everything. But she taught me a lot. But she taught me a lot about the way she lived her life. She lived her life fast and free, and the sex was great because I was a young guy, you know, not many experiences.
Right.
But she also taught me the ugly side of life because she was also strung out. It was during the crack epidemic, and she was strung out. But I had no idea. But because she led this facade. She worked every day, but she was totally strung out. It wasn't until we really got deep into it that I realized that she was involved with a drug dealer and that it was just totally, totally in disarray. And I bring back one example. One night I came over there. I just got left college. I was off for the weekend. I wanted to go see her. And she did not want me to go see her, I kind of like bogarted my way to go see her.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, she kind of like gave me like 5 minutes and was ready to brush me off. And me, the type of personality I am, I'm not hearing that. I came all this way to see you, and I want to see you. And it just happened to be that her boyfriend came to the door, and it was time to make decisions, you know, because it was a real deep situation. And when you're a young man, you're kind of like, well, this is my girl. I'm going to try to defend myself. And that's how people get shot. And if you don't use your brain. So I had to really think on my feet. She told me just to lay next to her girlfriend while he come in. I'll take care of him, this, that, and the third. But, and luckily I did listen to her. But it revealed a lot about her and a lot about myself.
Right.
And even though it hurt me a lot, but I learned from that. And I learned that the difference between a thug and a gentleman. And the gentleman side of me had to use his brain. The thug side of me would have got me killed because this girl was not worth it. And I had a whole lot of life to live. I had to lay next to her girlfriend to stay alive. And I remember that, like I said, that was like when I was 19 years old. And I stayed, and I kind of like lead off with that in the book, you know, and that's one of those situations. And, you know, and then another moment where we were just walking down the street. I was walking down the street with her and her child, and our same guy, same drug dealer boyfriend, got out the car. And was so upset that he seen her with me that he pulled her and beat her behind in front of her child and threw her in the car. It was the most, up to that point, it was just the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I've never seen that before. Never seen nobody.
Wow.
I've never seen a man actually come out and just grip a woman up by her hair and threw her in the car. And she called me later on and blamed it all on me. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
It was totally unbelievable.
I think it was totally unreal. We just talked about that, I believe it was last night or last week on our show, how people don't take responsibility for their own choices and decisions. And some people will live and die being victims. They will never, ever, ever own up to their role in anything. And you were a young man. You were what, nine? She was what, 9 years older than you? But it was your fault. First of all, you know, no disrespect to you, but she was an older woman messing with a child. That was number one. Number two, she put you in a very dangerous situation. One thing you'll learn about me in this show is that I don't jump on a, you know, we're all female bandwagon. If my fellow sisters are wrong, they're wrong. Heck, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I own up to my indiscretions, my mistakes, or whatever they are, I own up to mine. So, but again, I do understand what you are saying. You were hung up in, you know, you were with an older woman, and as you said, you know, all the intimate moments were great, but in the same breath, in hindsight, you know, you were really putting yourself almost in front of the oncoming bullet.
Yeah. It took me a long time to really get that out of me. It's easy to talk about now because I wrote about it and left it alone, but it was a really, I felt really embarrassed because, you know, as a man, you're not supposed to be weak in that moment. You're not supposed to be weak, and you're supposed to be almost embarrassed about it. But if I could help anybody in that, any type of man in that type, or anyone in that situation, by me talking about it, then I can help. That'll be fine with me because we all go through it. We all go through those situations.
Right.
Another point, an example of my book is also your friends, the crew that you're around. You know, everybody have a certain, everybody know personally their crew, and I had a very big crew. But certain people in your crew who really hate you, and they do everything to try to destroy you, destroy your relationships, destroy your money, destroy different things, you know, but you call these people your friend, you know what I mean, and you kind of look past their indiscretion, And, you know, you kind of have to grow and learn their behavior to get out of those situations. So I kind of, like, made a scenario where it's all true. It's all true, but, it's just where this guy, one of my friends, so-called friends, actually slept with everyone of everybody in the crew, his girls, their girlfriends, or every one of their girls, my friend's girls. He actually slept with actually every one of them.
So wait, this is real?
Yeah, this is real.
Okay. I had to make sure, because we always talk about, as women, you know, we always talk about this happening from our end. But very seldom do we hear, because we always think that you have that, the bromances and that brotherly bond and this and that, and it doesn't go on in that manly world. You know, you guys hang out in the man caves, and it's all for one and one for all, and you lie for each other, you cover for each other while you're out there with someone else. But to have someone, you know, to hear you say that the same things actually are going on among men.
Yeah,
there's
a snake in every crew.
Oh yeah.
There's a snake in every crew.
Everyone.
You just have to understand which one is the snake. Like, after you leave to go to work or go someplace, he's at your door knocking on the door talking to your girl. Believe me.
Mm.
The chapter eight is the hater player, the most vile. Chapter eight is my friends who he actually done it to. They're telling me, like, please put this out, because they want me to tell their story so badly.
Mm-hmm.
But this is exactly what goes on, you know. And, you know, we all have to distance ourselves from this guy because we would actually hurt him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's deep.
Mm. Wow, you learn something new? You learn something new every day because that's one of the things that I don't think I've ever really delved into a conversation with any males. And I know quite a few because of, you know, my profession alone, but I've never gotten into this end of it to really put a face to the fact that this happens across the board, you know. And how do you all deal with that? This is from a man's point of view. You know, we as women, you know, some of us lose our minds. We might do the cat fight thing and start to key up cars and all of that crazy stuff. But what do you all do as men when you find that snake in the grass that's messing around in your woman's grass? You know, what do you do?
You have to really be delicate, especially if it's a close friend that you know for 20 years, something like that. You really have to distance yourself. And really, because the last thing you want to do is go to jail for a knucklehead.
Right.
The last thing you want to do. So you really, especially when you know his family, his kids, and everything like that, and, you know, you have to distance yourself. I've been, and, you know, personally speaking, I had to distance myself from this person. I think once my last relationship before I got married, I had to do a whole rethought on where my life is going to go and who to just move away from to the positive, because I couldn't move on like this. I can't have this snake in my company around my family, around my new family. You know, I just couldn't do this.
Right.
And then later on to find out through his mouth that he turned out to be a little pedophile too.
Oh,
so
no.
It just was a little, you know, I mean, it's kind of like I knew, but I didn't really want to see it. But after he did some things, and he always liked younger women, younger than him. But once I started to really look at it, and I had to really examine it and listen to him, because I never really listened to him, I was, you know, when you're hanging out with your friends and everything, you doing this, that, and the third. You really never really seriously listen to your friends and the things that come out their mouth. Because you may be
right.
high, you may be drunk, whatever. But once you grow up and you stop doing the things that you was when you were a child, you really listen to a person, and you'd be like, and you start doing the math, hold on. This is what he's been doing. And he's in that, and he goes around masking his own fear, his own shame through drugs, alcohol, things like that. Always being up all night, you know, because he has a whole lot to confess about. And he spent a lot of it confessing it to me. So it, you know, keeping me up all night, because we were roommates for a while in college, and you know. And as going into adults and everything. So he confessed a lot of me, because I don't really understood why, but now that I look back on it and writing about it, because a lot of things about writing, and you read it, and you'd be like, hold on. He actually did this? He actually did? Because, like I said, writing is freeing you, and you actually looking at it on the paper, and you're like, these demons is actually coming out at me, and I had to confront it.
Wow, go ahead and finish, because this is really it's
eye-opening.
Yeah,
that's why I wrote Confessions of a Reformed Player. And this is a guy that get women. He get women. Women fall for him all the time, but they fall for the thug side, not the gentleman side. They fall for the fantasy, not the real person. And a lot
right.
of women fall for the fantasy. They never get in touch with the real guy. They close their eyes to the real guy. They always fall in love with their representative.
So they fall in love with the facade is what it is. And, you
exactly.
know, I know that, you know, we're just meeting for the first time this evening for the show, but you know, the show is Healing Through Hurt. That's the name of this show. And I am a survivor of domestic violence and abuse. And the person who I was married to was not the person who I fell in love with. The person who I fell in love with didn't really exist. And I fell in love with the good guy, but in reality, he was the demon within. So the good guy turned into the stranger in my house. Whereas, as you said, a lot of women fall in love with the facade. And I believe that sometimes, because this can be a two-way street too, men can be a great guy, and then they fall in love with Barbie or whoever she's supposed to be, but when she takes off the hair, the eyes, the nails, and whatever else may be an added part, you know, and the truth comes out, it's the same scenario over and over again. And I know that for all of the listeners, because there's a lot of you on the call, Corey, welcome. Thank you so much. If you have a question or a comment for my guests this evening, Keith B. Davis and Daniel Harshaw, feel free to press the number 1 on your phone. It's so many of you on the call, Corey. When you press the number 1, it will push your phone number to the top of the list to let me know that you'd like to be on air. But in the same breath, Daniel Harshaw is on the line, and we're going to get to your story in a moment. And I just wanted to ask you briefly, because your book is about the two brothers who are straight up from the streets. Bad boys. They are the thugs that so many women are gravitated or that are attracted to, and they gravitate towards. Is part of your story rooted in real life as well?
Well, I can say like 85% of it is.
Ah, okay.
The other 15%, I kind of use to my imagination, because I also
mm-hmm.
I made sure I changed the names on the characters. I made sure
right.
I also made sure I changed the streets and the locations or where certain incidents happened at. You know. But yeah, I feel like Keith, I write based on truth, You know, right. I don't like to read. I read a lot of books. I don't know books and nothing like that because I appreciate and love everybody else's creativity, you know.
Right.
But it's nothing like hearing the truth. Like, dang,
exactly.
I've seen that. Oh, I know somebody who just went through that. There's nothing
right.
like that, and that's how I like to write, like how Keith likes to write. You know, because
right.
everybody done been through something that we all done been through, and that's what my book is based on, Bulletproof Love, and a lot of people thought it was a romance book, but really, you know, it was the love that the two friends had for one another.
Right.
You know, in their ordeal as they came up through life.
Right. So, gentlemen, let me put this out to both of you. What do you think we need to do to change the mindset? Because, you know, when we change the mindset, everything changes along with it. But there are so many girls. We see the videos where the thug life is glamorized and women are dehumanized, basically. And this is what the young girls know. The old heads in my age group and older are trying to be the young girls. And we know that they say that there's a shortage of men per capita to women. So a lot of women are still single, and they're willing to settle. So what do you think? What do you think needs to happen to turn this around? And I mean as a big picture, because, Mr. Harshaw, in your book, you're talking about these two brothers who grew up on the rough side. And they basically had nothing, but the way that they achieved their success monetarily was by illegal means. And we're going to start with yours in the second half of the show, but I wanted to bring you both on to get a take on this situation, because with Mr. Davis's story, how do you handle this? I see that Mr. Davis was saying, you know, you really do have to think about it before you react, so you can think about it and then respond, because so many times I know on the news here, and I'm sure you all see it wherever you live and for all of the listeners, is the fact that you can look at the news on any given day and see where somebody's at a party or something happened, and next thing you know, two men are fighting. And is it really about the man ego, as I call it? Is it really about showing and saving face that makes so many men not give a damn and do something that could, in essence, ruin their entire lives?
Yeah, it's about your crew, the guys you believe. A lot of things start by egging on your crew.
Mm-hmm.
If you was by yourself, you wouldn't do none of this stuff. You'll back off. But if you're with your crew, and like I said, every crew has a Don Juan. Every crew has a hustler. Every crew has a guy who's just a big mouth who talk crap all the time. And that usually be the one that usually gets you in trouble, get you in fight, get you in stuff that you normally wouldn't get into. And that usually be the one you have to peel off somebody or pull a little away. And, you know, and sometimes as men, sometimes we are too loyal to our crew until it gets us in hot water, until we see. You know, we love our crew. I tell my sons all the time, you don't have to love your crew. You don't have to love your friends, because they're not going to love you back when you're in trouble. And you have to love yourself enough to know, I'm not going with y'all tonight. You know, I have a friend. I'll give you one more scenario. I'm home. I was invited to a party on the boat. My friend who invited me came over to the house. We ate, talked a little bit. I told him, don't go with that guy, because he's going to make you late for your boat, and your woman is not going to like that. He told me,
right.
Screw me, F. He told me to screw me. He told me off and went with him. Later on that night, and when the boat left, he was with me and my wife at the time, was with his girl. She was looking at me like, well, where are you at? You know where he at. He never made the boat. His loyalty towards his friend made him lose his relationship with that woman. As soon as she came back off the boat, as soon as she came back from off a party, she called it quit. You know, not only did he got screwed twice through him, you know, it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things sometimes that, and he is, and I'm still friends with him, the guy that got his relationships. Now he's just, it hurts him so bad because he didn't listen to me, for one, and for two, that he was that gullible, that he was that much of a friend to him, and he wasn't a friend, it wasn't back home, it wasn't the same way.
Right.
You know, so that's just an example of your crew getting you into stuff, messing up your relationships. You know, guy cheating. He in your face, but he's also screwing your girl. It's just insane, and it is not necessary. You know, if we're supposed to be out here bonding together, we're supposed to be brothers, we're supposed to be black people bonding together, but we actually screwing each other over.
That is.
And it has to stop. Over jealousy, over money, over just pettiness, it just has to stop. You don't have to worry about the white man ever touching us. We touch each other. We destroy each other. It does, you know, and it's insane. I think, and I go back to your question: What do we have to do? We have to be grown men and live in truth and say, call it out as it is, and tell them to their face, yo, I'm not dealing with you on this level. I don't trust you. I don't want to be in your company until you decide that you want to change your life. Other than that, I can't be associated with you.
Exactly. And, you know, you brought up so many good points. In the Facebook events page, Diana Knox Cooper is saying, wow, he's telling the straight truth. I mean, they are on it. They are listening. Ladies, if you want to chime in, feel free to call in 646-478-4726. Press the number 1 on your phone to be on air, because tonight is about having this cerebral conversation. We have these men here, and you're hearing it from the male perspective. This is something that we don't get all of the time when we have men who will come forward and tell it like it is from the male's perspective. And as you said, there comes a time when we have to grow up. We as women need to grow up, but we as men, and it is so true, there's nothing worse than when your man, and this is me talking from my personal experiences, when your man will kick you to the curb for their homeboys, and then their homeboys are doing their own thing and will forget about you, and you're standing there looking stupid. Your woman is mad with you, ready to kick you to the curb because you kicked her to the curb, but your friend and his lady a living large, enjoying themselves, but you were so loyal to that homeboy, to your brother, not knowing that you weren't going to get the same thing in return. So it does. It's such a breakdown. It's a bad image. And I'm pretty sure that it happens in every social economic group, every ethnicity. But, you know, as you said, society is plagued the African-American race as this negative, in a negative light. So the bottom line is we have to commit to live to a higher standard. We have to commit to bringing back the family setting, to making our families stronger. We have to do that. Nobody is going to do that for us, because the majority of society wants to see us fail. Heck, most people that look like us want to see us fail, because we are still in the crab pot mentality way of thinking. So we need to change. We need to break this generational curse that's going on. So for all of you,
in the call query. If you'd like to be on air, just press the number 1 on your phone, and, of course, we'll bring you on air. But I know that I'm jumping between the Facebook group and, of course, on here to see if there's comments. But the ladies are loving it over in Facebook. And Diana Knox Cooper writes, crab pot mentality, shaking her head, Jesus help us. Yes, Jesus needs to help us. We need to all go back to what we knew way back in the days of old. We have to go back and find our faith. We have to go back to our grassroots in order for us to help heal throughout the generations. But, you know, I know that we talk about it all the time when we do girl talk. We talk about all of this. But it's so, I know it's so profound for me to hear it from you as a man. And you know, you see what your homeboys are about. And, you know, in hindsight, for both of you gentlemen, and Mr. Harshaw, I'm pretty sure that Dee is probably on the line listening in. So, Dee, I hope I don't get him in any trouble, but I'm about to ask him some serious questions. So I know that at some point in time, if you care to share, there are times when I know that you all probably had some rough spots when you were dating or whatever it was, where she probably tried to tell you that there were some people in your lives that you should have let go of. Did you go through that type of a thing and you know, did you learn from the lesson, or did you just do the right thing and listen to her because she knows best? We know what we're talking about, gentlemen. We really do. But
we done bumped our heads a couple times where I had to, where I listened to her, I didn't listen to her, and then after it happened, I'm like, oh man, I should have listened to her, you know.
Right.
So after that, you know, I started taking heed to what my lady was saying to me, so I kind of back up and don't react as fast as I used to, because I have
right.
to realize I do have a wife, you know, who has my second interest. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Opposed to having my first interest on what I want to do.
And, you know, we as women, whether you all know it or not, when we love you with all our heart. Most of us do. And not only that, we are your ride or die chicks. We can accept you with all of your faults as long as we know that you are working towards that change, or you have atoned for your sins and you are making that stride. We will be by your side. But here comes the infamous but. Like you said, Mr. Davis, and of course, Mr. Harshaw, we're really going to jump into your book, because those brothers, yeah, uh-huh, the Moet, mm-hmm, money over every, yeah, we're going to get to that. So, oh, it's coming. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it does hurt us. When you put your brothers, your homeboys, and, you know, I'll share this, Mr. Davis, Mr. Harshaw, and all of the listeners. When I was married to my psychotic, now ex-husband, he would try to show off, in my opinion, in front of his male friends. And he had no idea just how badly they were clowning him. They weren't laughing with him. They were laughing at him. And after he would do his dirt and try to walk all over me and embarrass me or dehumanize me in front of them, thinking that that was impressive, it was his friends who came to my aid behind the scenes. It was his friends who tried to comfort me. It was his friends who wanted to get me protection.
Yeah, and that's how it is. Everybody has a fool, you know, and they crew. And they'd be like, well, they're like, you have a beautiful woman, and you acting like this. Oh man, you don't know nothing about that. I got this under control. I got this. I'm the man. And the third, and then they go right out and mess with a woman less than what they have at home.
Exactly.
And I have a chapter in the book about that. I have a chapter about a guy who he had a beautiful woman at home. And he went out and cheated on her and had She couldn't have any kids by him. But he went out and had two kids by his side jaw. And he ended up, and she ended up exposing him and brought his kids to his house, and she left them and left them high and dry, and he ended up killing her. You know, ended up killing her, and you know, we had to, and I had, and you know, the way I wrote it, where I had to, I don't want to give it too much away, but I ended up having to talk him down from it, but he just didn't listen. But it was just, it's just a deep situation where men think that they're the man, and their arrogance gets out of control. And, you know, and sometimes within, when you're young, you're arrogant. You're think you're the man, you know, because, you know, women tend to boost your ego up, especially when you're that shade or that type of, you're a football hero or something, because, you know, like I said, when you're living that life, whether you're in athletics or you're rapping or whatever, you know, you get a lot of attention, especially when you're local. When you're local and women in your local scene love you and they know you got a girl, it's like dropping water on grease. It's popping. And, you know, and the ego just gets huge. And you're sitting there watching them, and it's not because, you know, your friend is jealous because that 30, but you know this is not good. You're living lies. You're staying up all night, you know. I got to ride with you to make sure you don't do nothing stupid. I got to stay sober so you cannot get into any trouble. And I was kind of like always the wingman, so I could write about these things. Now I understand why I was in those positions, because I could write about them clearly. Because I stayed sober, I had to sit there and look at him, basically make a fool out of himself. Then turn around and marry a woman that had no idea what his life was about, you know. And then had to, you know, sit there and make up lies and not be real. But everything comes to the light. Eventually, your lies will come back to haunt you.
Oh yeah.
And I get so by watching all the things that they went through, I just stopped. I was on a no lying stance. I just want to tell the truth all the time, whether it hurts you or not. I just want to tell you the truth. Let it fall, let it fall. If you don't like it, fine. And my favorite line is, "I'm sorry that you feel that way, but that's the truth." And a lot of women don't like to hear the truth. Because if you're used to being lied to all the time, the truth is kind of like, I don't want to listen to that. You can't tell me about my man. I know my man. No, you don't. You don't want to know that your man be out here strapping hookers. You don't want to know about your man be out here in the strip clubs, doing things, going down on chicks, doing all kinds of stuff. Then you wonder why you got this and you got that. You don't want to know that. But you're still with him. And you're still with him. You've been with him for what? How many years? 15, 20 years? You haven't got married yet. You haven't got a commitment yet. Why are you still in this situation? I love him. Well, look at it like this. How many positive things have he brought to your life as opposed of negative things he has brought to your life? If he brought a lot of drama to you, you might want to think about that. Has he put a ring on your finger? Has he even taken you out of the country? Has he even taken you out of the state? Because most players do never take their woman nowhere. Never. They take them to the local spot, but they never take them out of state. And if they do take them out of state, they'll take them out of state where nobody knows where they're at. She'll be happy, all of this, that. She'll be happy. It's just like if you've got a starving animal and you throw them a bone, they're happy. You throw them a steak, they're happy with that one. And then they won't get it for another 2 months. That's the psychology of being a player in this society.
Yeah, and I always say that there are so many women out here willing to settle, and they will accept any warm body in their cold bed just to say that they have that warm body. And then they boast about it like they have something. And I always say, you know, because my ex decided, like you said, you take a woman, he chose a woman of a lesser God. You want a 40-plus-year-old woman who has nothing to show for living, still living at home with mommy and daddy. But as he said in his own words, with the neighbor, he could be whoever he wanted. He could treat her any way he wanted to, and she would accept it. But when he came home to me, his wife, reality set in, and all of his insecurities and his inadequacies and shortcomings became real. So he chose to have the life that was unreal, the facade. He chose to have that person that he could walk over, and he knew, like you said, she'd still be sitting there like a lap dog waiting for him to come back. Sad but true. It's what some women do. And well, actually, it's what a lot of women do. And I think that this problem is twofold. It goes so much deeper than just all men are dogs. All men think of what they have, you know, below their belt. Well, a lot of women are thinking with what they have below their waistline, too. So the bottom line is simple. This is something where there's enough blame to go around on both sides. And,
yeah.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah, it is. It is. It can go. It's a blame can go around. It's sometimes comical. I can sit in a room and have a conversation with a woman. I'm married. I've been married for 5 years, going on six.
Mm-hmm.
So I can have a conversation with a woman and just know where she's at in her situation, just by the way she talks.
Mm-hmm.
I can know whether she's single. I know whether she's going through stuff. I know just by having a conversation where she's at. And it doesn't necessarily have to, it doesn't have to go that way, but it always does. I always, you know, it doesn't matter. I can just sit there and be like, okay. When I was single, I could size you up. I've been on 300 dates. I've dated 300 different women. And before I got married at 40. So I've had a lot of time to study and go on dates. I know exactly where you're at. I know exactly what you're going to say without me even having to say. I don't have to binge forward into your personal life. You'll tell me everything I need to know on your first date of where you're at in life, because you're already going to tell me what your standards are. What do you want? And where you was and where you're at now.
Right.
You know, so, it's sometimes the best thing, I tell my wife all the time, the best thing for me to do sometimes is just shut up and listen. And women love a man who can listen to them.
Right.
And you can just guide the conversation any way you want it to go. Just shut up
right.
and listen. And most players know how to do that. Shut up, listen. I'll provide you with your fantasy. I'll give you what you want. I'll give you what you're looking for. But when that fantasy is fulfilled, I'm ready to move on to the next conquest. And I think women don't realize that.
Right. We have a couple of comments in the events chat room. Ann Thomas writes, wow, willing to accept any warm body in their cold bed. Sad. My pastor used to say some people are willing to accept bad breath rather than having no breath. It's sad that many women are willing to settle, but that's what happens when you don't know your own identity. And that's true. That's true. And Diana Knox Cooper writes, it is sad. I just posted that I know someone just like that, and it just hurts me to my heart that she won't listen to her. So, you know, again, as we said, this is something that's very much across the board. The blame is everywhere. So, you know, for me, I've been married twice, and I divorced both of my husbands. Wasn't them divorcing me. But in all of my relationships, especially when I got over 30, I used to ask, what makes a woman someone you want to sleep with, someone you want to date, and someone you want to marry? And the same thing you just said, that you can size up the woman in the first couple of moments of a conversation, is what I've heard before. I know that, quote unquote, the vast majority, I'm considered wife material. The problem with that is most men aren't ready for or looking for the wife. They want either the person that they can bed or the person that they can date, who will sit around, go out with other people, and they have that freedom. And then there's the smaller group of you who decide to settle down. So for the both of you, gentlemen, what makes a woman someone you want to sleep with? Before you got married, of course, this is when you were still in your out there things. I don't want to get either one of you in trouble, but someone you want to sleep with, someone you want to just date. Well, let's add the person that you want to keep is just a friend. And what makes some of us wife material?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dan. Well, wife material, I guess faith in God, and a hard worker, and somebody who's willing to buy into my dreams and me, and I'm buying into hers. Now, somebody just wanted to sleep with, I would say they usually put that out on the front line anyway. They put it out there. I never go into a situation where I'm looking to sleep with any woman. It just kind of happens. Or she's trying to make another guy jealous. That has happened to me too. I've been set up to where, oh, you look nice in your suit. You look real good. Let's go to this party. And the dude that she's trying to make jealous is right there. But unbeknownst to me, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Until he spends too much time making me happy. Like, he's getting me drinks, having conversation with me, going back and forth. And then I'm figuring it out. Oh, okay. Then when she's finished making him jealous, then she wants to give me the satisfaction of what she accomplished.
Right.
Then she'll go back to him. Then she'll go right back to him. And we'll still be friends, but I won't be that guy. I'll just be that friend mode. And then she'll get with him, and he'll ruin her life. Put back in the friend mode. Put me back in the glass box. You know, women have that type of thing where, okay, you're my friend and everything, but I'm gonna put you over here in this glass box and break in case of emergency when I want you, when I need you, when he starts acting up. And it's the same thing for guys. Sometimes they have their girl, but it's hard to catch them. It's hard to keep them on track because they're always around the place. They're always all over the place. And I've always been in that friend mode.
Because
like I said, I'm not a thug. I'm a gentleman. And you're a gentleman. When you're a gentleman, you always put in the glass case. You look good in suits. You look nice. You carry yourself well. You're articulate. Yeah. But this thug over here is turning me on. I got this, that, and the third. But he has a whole bunch of kids, and you're in competition with other women. So that's kind of like how it goes.
Right. And we do have a question in the chat room. Diana Knox Cooper writes, she says, I had a man tell me one time, that it doesn't matter if a woman sleeps with them on the first date or the 50th date. His main initial goal is to sleep with her. And then he added, what's the point in waiting? So her question to you, gentlemen, is she wants to know, is that a true statement? Is that really what your ultimate or initial goal is?
That's on your mind state. Whether it depends on if you're looking at it from an immature mind state or an adult mind state. You know, because a lot of immature people, I mean, women are just looked at as just a jump off, period. Now, when you done matured and you got grown, like Heaps has said, and, you know, it's time to move on and live your life like you're supposed, you know, you treat women different. And like you say, you see women when they come and you're like, oh, I can hit that right now if I want to or later on. Just off her expression or how she acting, and she may not even had a conversation. It's just her look alone and how she look at you. And down the line, she might start talking to you throughout that day, and you still know, oh, I can hit that. But why would you want something that you can hit when somebody got something that they saving for that right individual, that right man? I'd rather go for the person that saved me than if I can hit her at this video shoot or this movie set or over my homeboy house.
Right.
Wow. I agree.
We're getting deep up in here.
Yeah, it's really like that because I never, in this day and age of diseases and everything that go around, you don't want to go into nothing that you don't know nothing too much about because, you know, your life could be ended. We're not in the 60s no more. You can just get a shot in your butt and you keep it moving. So you want to get to know this person really well before you go there on those situations. And, you know, you got to always practice safe sex. And a lot of young guys don't do that. There's a lot of beautiful women. There's a lot of beautiful young girls out here. A lot of them. But these guys today, they don't want that. They don't want that. It has changed. The generation has changed a lot. You know, they're mostly into other dudes. You know, the girls be chasing them.
Mm-hmm.
And it has changed a lot. I've seen a lot of things I'm not particularly happy with or understand. You know, they played with being a bum. They played with not dressing up. They have no creativity. They're used to just being mediocre. Nobody wants to be great. Everybody wants to do what everybody else doing. They think they're doing something different, but they're doing everything that everybody else doing. And they don't value education. You know, everybody looks down on education. But how are you? You want to be a rapper, but you need to be educated business wise. You need to be educated on how to work and network within your circle. And another thing I hate, because I'm from Philly, nobody wants to leave their block.
Wow.
Everybody wants success to come to their block. They're scared to go where success is. And success is not coming to your block, to your neighborhood.
Right.
You have to go to it. You have to go out to it. And the ones that do venture forth, and it's a sad reality, but they do be hated on. But you have to go to where you want to be. And that's where, and that's how it is.
Right.
It all meets up because a woman's going to love a man who's a go-getter, not a foot soldier. They may like it in the beginning, but they don't have a fresh mind set on life. It gets boring,
right?
And you know, two likes matches. If your woman is not a go-getter, then you probably going to be with a guy who's not a go-getter. If you're a go-getter and you with a guy that's not a go-getter, but you love him, for what? How? You know, you're going to be stuck.
Right.
So it's, you know, I know I'm getting kind of deep into it, but you just have to understand where people be at in their life.
Right. We have a lot of comments going on in the events chat room on Facebook. Marcella D. Moore writes, the Healing Through Hurt Book Club, although we are great influencers, we as women tend to think that we have the magic potion to change a man. We only have the power to change ourselves. Only God has the power to change others. And Diana Knox Cooper responded. She said, amen, Marcella, amen. I had to learn that the hard way. Thank God I did. Saved me a lot of future heartaches and more heartaches. And let me go back up because we have a lot of comments here. And then we're going to go into Mr. Harshaw's book. Diana Knox Cooper writes, I also had a cousin of hers that said men will always have a main woman and then he will have others on the side. For example, Frosted Flakes may be his favorite cereal, but sometimes he may want Fruit Loops or Sugar Smacks. That's a good way to put it. But I tell you, this is a great transition and a contrast, and I hope that Mr. Davis can stay around a while because in the end we're going to bring this all together because, Mr. Harshaw, in your book, you straight up go for the two brothers, and their thing was money above everything else, money over everything else. Money over everything else. So, again, this is another interesting and wonderful topic because we as women, you know, we know when we're being put on the back burner. You know, Mr. Davis was talking about the fact that you put us on the back burner for your homeboys. Now, your characters have money over everything else. And, of course, that includes everyone. So, now take us into these streets where the brothers have decided to go down the road that they chose.
Well, one of Frank, he ended up going to the, you know, he went to the gas station with his friend, his best friend, Mike, and he ran into a female that he went to school with, which name was Lisa. And he found Lisa attractive. And when he seen her, she looked at him, you know, like he was a bum because, you know, basically he was. He wasn't clean or nothing like that. And he had lied to her and told her he worked at AutoZone, you know, over there on Livernois somewhere. And they ended up leaving, and he got back in the car. And his friend, Mike asked him, you know, did you get her number? He's like, no, why you didn't get her number? He's like, because she looked at me like I was a crackhead. He's like, I need to get some money. I can't take this no longer. And Mike told him, you know, I got somewhere we can make some money, but there's a chance somebody might get killed. But if we control the situation, you know, won't nobody get hurt. And they proceeded to do that. So, you know, they used the information that his sister gave him about another man that she knew frequented the club often. And they waited until he went to the club, and, you know, they waited in his backyard, and they thought he wasn't there. But they thought there was no one there. But his girlfriend, you know, she came outside, and she didn't see him, and they put them guns behind her head, and they walked her in the house, and they thought they were going to get a couple $100, and they got more than what they bargained for, and they never looked back. And, you know, the whole reason for me writing this story was, you know, a lot of us, all my stuff is based on reality, and a lot of things in that book is based on what I did and what my friends have did and what I done seen, you know. And before I had put the book out, I had passed it around because I was incarcerated for 13 and a half years. And I had passed it around, and I got input from people before I ended up putting it out, you know. And I wanted to make sure all my clubs was real. So if you heard of that club, you know, you probably been there. I wanted to make sure all the streets was real and the stop signs was there if you've been there, whether it was in Detroit or outside of Detroit. I wanted to make sure this book was, you know, very heartfelt because you have so many young guys out there that just depend on drugs. That's all they know. They don't want to get a job. The hell with a job when I can do this right here. You know,
right.
I would love to sell drugs and make $1,000 a week, and I ain't got to go work at McDonald's going to pay me $7.40. I don't know too many people who have passed it up. So, you know, like I say,
everything I write about, I want people to feel it. I want people to understand it, know that it's true, it's reality. And, you know, I'm not going to give you nothing where it's a fairy tale where you be like, oh, man, dang. So he got a mansion and this and that and this and that. No, if somebody get killed in my book, they going to jail or they being investigated. Most murderers get caught. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know too many places where somebody get killed and they don't get caught. And if you put a title on your name and you're selling drugs, the feds are going to look at you because you put a title on it. Now, if you
right.
stay by your, now if you stay by yourself, you may not have a DEA knocking at your door. You know, but I wanted. You know, it's a grimy book. It's a urban book, but I wanted it to be exciting, you know, for the people, and which it is. But I wanted them to get some food for thought too.
Right.
I don't want them to read it for the glitz and glamour. Oh, they got this money. They were selling that dope. Yeah, these young men were smart, very smart.
Right.
You know, but they still took their life away from them in the end.
Right.
And do you want to take your mother through this? Because in the book is a young man in there who ended up going to jail named Big Luke, who they ended up robbing. His mother is in there, and she's talking about how, man, y'all could have played basketball. Y'all could have did this, but y'all chose to run the streets. But I know when a lot of young people read my book, that part is going to go over their head. They're still going to look at the drugs and the guns, but hopefully I can reach someone if I can't reach them all.
Yeah.
I was told, you know, when I was younger, I used to be in special ed. So I used to be called a local dummy all the time because I couldn't read, spell, and write, and none of that. You know, my father was, you know, was stuck on drugs. He was hooked on drugs. And when I went to prison, you know, I had ran into a guy, and he was writing something. He was typing. I said, man, what you up to doing? He said, I'm writing a book. I said, yeah. He said, man, everybody got a story to tell. And that's when I sat down and I wrote my first book. And once I wrote the first one, I ended up writing 9. And I never stopped. I wrote 8 books within 4 years. And I wrote 1 book within 2 years. But Bulletproof Love is like my favorite. I also, you know, I direct movies. I also shoot music videos. That's why I can relate as far as the women, why I'm trying to hit on you while you're doing music videos and all that. So I can relate to that part. You know, and I see a lot of the goofy stuff going on. And a lot of times, it don't be the man's fault. Like you say, it be the women's fault. The women who want to choose the man who run up on the man. Ooh, I like you. Oh, you so sexy. Well, I didn't even ask you all that. I thought it was the man who was supposed to ask you that. You know what I mean? So the things that Keith talks about is the same things that I talk about in my book as well.
Right. And we have some more comments coming in the chat room, in the event chat room. Tina Hobson writes, here in Ohio, a girl was almost beaten to death after she tried to convince another girl on Facebook that she was worth more than what she was going to give to a male. By the way, the girl and her friends were the ones who beat the girl who was trying to help her. Shaking her head, she says, in other words, some women don't want better or to do better. And then she says, boom, there it is. That's the truth right there. And I'm going to tell you something, Mr. Harshaw, your wife is all on it. She all up in here asking my questions, but we're going to get to it right now. She says two things. She wants to know from both of you, projects are you working on right now currently? I usually ask these closer to the end of our conversation, but Dee is, she's my program director tonight. She all up in it. So we're going to, I'm asking you questions now. So it's twofold. What projects are you working on right now? And
this is
a very profound one, is the fact that if there's one thing that you could say to anyone listening now live and who will hear this months, weeks, years down the road, what would you say to anyone who's going to hear your words from tonight?
First of all, what I'm working on is I'm working on a script right now. I haven't gave it a name right now because I plan on shooting me another movie. I had shot one movie called Bulletproof Love. Greed, which I put the trailer up on my YouTube page, which you can find on Daniel Harshaw. It's my YouTube page. That's what I'm currently working on is shooting these music videos, things of that nature. What would I like? What would I leave for the people? To stay inspired to know that you can do anything. Like I say, I used to be called a dummy for the longest until I caught a case and went to prison and threw my life away at 16 and came home at 30-something. So stay inspired and know that you can do it and you can keep moving on. And you always got somebody else that's around you that you don't think that's listening to you, that's listening to you. And they take heed to what you're saying, and they might not even tell you that they're listening to you. But always right. know that you're an inspiration to somebody else, whether you're doing something or not.
Right. And I'll tell you, you know, what before you answer, Mr. Davis, is that you know, I'm still in shock and awe of how fast my show has grown in 4 years. You know, we literally are listened to around the world. And it amazes me when people contact me and tell me, you know, I heard your show and it touched me in this way, or something that your guest said did this and that. So I'm just so amazed by all of this and your words and the fact that this is coming from men, African-American men as well, that has such a positive message. And I was working with a young man, kind of like his surrogate mom, but, you know, my nonprofit, we work with at-risk youth and their families anyway. But he, as you said, Mr. Harshaw, you know, he's been labeled as a challenged individual. And he had gone to sign up for school at a community college, and he just felt like the people were mistreating him, and they thought that he was a dummy, a child of a lesser God. And all of his experiences from his childhood came back to the forefront. And I'm going to make sure that he hears this show. I'm going to send it to him as soon as it's over so that he can hear your words. Because I say all the time, there are people who may not need to hear Mr. Davis's words. They need to hear yours, Mr. Harshaw. Or they may not need to hear what you have to say. They need to hear Mr. Davis's words. Or some people need to just see our interaction. They need to hear the comments of the ladies over in the events page that I'm reading their comments, and to see that we can coexist together and respect one another's opinions. So, you know, I just want to thank you all for that, for agreeing to come on here sight unseen, because, as I said, you don't know me from Eve, but this is what I love to do. And I just wanted to thank you both for being here this evening. So with that said, Mr. Davis, you can give us your response to both of the questions.
Okay. I would say get with like-minded people, meaning that get with people that are like you on the same road as you, because negativity, you can't focus, you can't live in that realm. So get with people that are like-minded like yourself. And I got two projects going on. I have another poetry book, and I'm going to write another novel. This probably would be a short story, but it'd probably be another novel, probably Married Man, from a married man's point of view. And the poetry book would probably be, I already got a few, I got a lot of them, but I just write every day continuously. I have a journal that I've been writing since 9/11, basically. So I have a lot of work I can just put out, and I keep a journal every day. I write a journal every day. So, and just keep working. I tell people just keep working, and everything will fall into place.
Wow. Thank you so much. I just lost my train of thought. This is just I was over reading the comments in the chat room, and as I said, Mr. Harshaw, your wife has become my unofficial official co-host tonight, and she's on it. So thank you to Ms. D for stepping in and taking over that responsibility, because it does take a lot when you're running the call query and looking at the show chat room and the events page chat, which is usually quite busy, but two things. We have about 40 minutes left. I want you both to do this. Pick something, just a passage from your book, a short one, and read it for us. Put us in your book. Just we're going to start with Mr. Davis because we began the show with him. And just a small passage, ladies especially, and gentlemen, if you want to, who are listening or who will be listening, close your eyes because now we're going to journey into the pages of these two books, and we're going to have those words brought to life by the creators, the two authors. So with that said, we're going to turn the mic over to Keith B. Davis to take us into the pages of his book. And before you start, give us the name of your book and how people can get your book.
Okay. I'll give you one from The Awakening. This is my second as a poetry book. You can get that one from Exuberius.com. And you could get the first one, Insight to One's Soul, from Amazon.com also. You get both books from Amazon.com. The book that I'm writing that is done now that hasn't been, is not out yet, won't be out until June, basically, June or May. It will, Confessions of a Reformed Player. But I'll give you a little taste of The Awakening. This one is called Dark Skin. I'm dark as night, but I'm as beautiful as a ray of light. I stand out on the mountaintop, being strong and never drop. My dark skin keeps me afraid. My dark skin empowers me to be on point. I see myself splashing all over the TV, magazines, and, oh, yes, even the movie screen. We are with women of our dreams. We are here to stay. Did you hear? We are here to stay. We will be in places where you never seen, blowing wads of money that is obscene, watching sunsets and sandy beaches. And don't try to stop me. I'll never be stopped. I will always be right there, holding up my fist right everywhere.
Wow.
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 And the ladies are in the chat room, and Tina Hobson just put in big, bold letters, let's take a journey. So we're all right here with you. We are right here with you. And what's the name of your book again?
That's The Awakening.
The Awakening.
You can find that on Amazon and Exuberius.com. Or you can just go to my page, Keith B. Davis page, and like it. And like my author page. You can also find me on Twitter, Bernard the Man. And I'm everywhere, basically. I'm everywhere. Or you can just call me on friend request me on Keith Davis. I'll talk to anyone. I'll advise anyone on where they need to go, on new authors. I help a lot of new authors. I help anybody who needs help that are positive and want to go and fulfill their dreams. I am here for service.
Wow. And before we move to Mr. Harshaw, we have comments in the chat room from Arlene Spann. I appreciate the life stories and the comments that he stated about no fairy tales. And another one that Arlene Spann writes is, know you are an inspiration to someone else. And she said that that's just the little nugget that she heard from you all tonight. So I'm telling you all, you are reaching so many people, and they're going to share and tell people and tell people and tell people. But this is what it's all about. We have to share our experiences. We have to share our stories, because if we keep it to ourselves, we help no one. And it's selfish. I say that all the time. It's very selfish. And so, again, just know that you all are touching the world. So it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful listening to you all this evening. I know that I'm enjoying it, and from the comments in the chat room, a lot of people are as well. So, Mr. Harshaw, we're going to turn it over to you. Say the name of your book and read us that passage. Once again, everybody, close your eyes. We're about to go on our second leg of our journey. We have about 34 minutes left in our show. So we're turning it over to Daniel Harshaw now for him to take us into the pages of his book.
Well, this is my book, from my passage, chapter 114 of my book, Bulletproof Love, Lord, by me, Daniel Harshaw. I actually just opened the page and just grabbed one so I could get out of Mike was laying on the floor thinking about the good time he had on the street with Frank, looking through his photo albums of all the pictures Tracy sent to him the days he was out while talking to his boss, he called him Tall Boy. I remember this day, dog. Look, that's me and my brother Frank when we had just bought the Phantoms and shit. Man, you should have seen how people were trying to see who was in this bitch. You boys are getting that much on a different level, Mike. I can't wait till I walk out of here. I hate I even caught this gun case. You'll be out there, homie. Just don't do nothing stupid and be in here with me. I feel your pain. Nigga, you don't feel my pain. You doing 5 years for the gun. You see, I ain't never going home. Me, I'm dying in here. So this is my home, my world. So don't feel shit I'm going through. Do what's right, Paul, and make the right move. You'll make it. Who's that, Mike? That's when I first bought my own business. You see my man right there? Yeah. He was our connection. He was a powerful man. What happened to him? They hit him with money laundering. They didn't even get him on any drugs. But he ended up getting 5 years like you. They hit you with the 848 King law? Yeah, and ain't no coming from up under that. But like I said, before you make the wrong move, make sure you make the right move and stay at home. That's from my chapter 144 out of Bulletproof Love. 144.
Wow.
Also get my books on Amazon.com and Borders as well. You can follow me at author Daniel Harshaw on Facebook. You can also follow me on Instagram at _director50mm. And I'm also on Twitter, @_SupermanDay. But I would love to speak to the kids and talk to the kids because I done been through a lot as well as far as being, you know, having my life took from me for so long. And people tell me, you know, I didn't have no formal education, so I self-taught myself with my friends. So like I say, if you want to be something, you can do it. Just keep moving. Don't let nothing knock you down. If it knocks you down, get back up.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you all, you know, when I do speaking engagements, because I deal in a lot of violence, domestic violence, abuse, things like that, you know, I have those people who talk about they're so high and mighty with their degree here, degree there, their fooly-fa-foo-foo degree, and their blah, blah, blah. So I tell them, and, you know, I always share this quite often. I tell people, okay. So while you're speaking like you're so much holier than thou because of your 88 million degrees, when that bullet is coming towards you, don't waste your time with the AA because that's definitely going to kill you. I want you to go up there, at least grab your master's off the wall and put that in front of you and see if that'll stop that bullet. And if you don't think it will, just skip the doctor and go for that there PhD. And you hold it up in front of you and you wait for that piece of paper to stop that bullet.
Right.
Because right. I don't care how many papers people have hanging on the wall, we all still put our pants on one leg at a time. Or some of us can hold the pants down and jump in with both legs. Don't matter. We still put them on and take them off the same way. We still eat, sleep, and do other things the exact same way. So when people talk about some of the dumbest people I know have more paper than I'll ever have, and I have quite a bit. I have a whole wall full of things and about to add some more. But that doesn't make me
any better than someone who has a high school education. I worked my butt off, and I made the choice when I got older to go back to school and follow my dreams and finish up my bucket list. But the bottom line is, I'm still just me. Guess what? People can say that you may be challenged and you may be, you don't have a formal education and all of this stuff, but guess what? We're all sitting here on the same show, and the same people are listening to us, so who sounds like the bigger dummy? You know, sometimes you have to take people, sometimes words are just that, they are words. Words are only given power when we allow them to control us in a way that's unhealthy. You know, I've seen people who have the Pulepa PhD and the this and the DDT and ABCDEFGs. They can't write, talk, or think worth a dang. And some of them might have the book smarts, but they don't have the street smarts. So at some point in life, it always evens out. If they end up making a wrong turn and go down one of the streets in Detroit that they know nothing about in a really bad neighborhood, guess who they're going to try to get them out of there? They see you walking down the street. Who's going to have the upper hand? Really? I was in New York once. I was on the subway, and I just happened to have been in a car that was full of, I guess they were a theater group, but they were all deaf. And I believe it was myself and one other person who society says, we're the normal ones, we can hear. But all of these people, their hands were flying and they were laughing and they were talking to one another. And I said, you know what? Now who's the person who's challenged? I was in that whole streetcar in New York with a bunch of deaf people, but I was the one who was at the disadvantage because I didn't know what they were talking about. They could have been planning on throwing me out a window or something or hacking me up and leaving me under the seats for all I knew. I didn't know. So again, when people tell you those types of things, you keep speaking your truth and you keep speaking your power because therein lies the light for someone else who's living with those type of stigmatism and those types of self-worth issues based on what someone else said about them. So, you know, I love the fact that you stand up and you live your truth and you can talk about it. And that's what it's all about for both of you gentlemen, because as you said, it's such a manly man world. Men shouldn't cry and men shouldn't be vulnerable and men shouldn't talk about their vulnerabilities and blah, blah, blah. You know, but to me, I love a man with a beautiful mind, but I also love a man who can show his vulnerable side. We can share that because, as I said, just as I can be his ride-or-die chick, I want him to be my ride-or-die guy, no matter what. Whether you're a blue-collar worker, whether you're a CEO, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's about your heart, your spirit, and your soul. And what you've done to help someone else unconditionally. And by you standing up and telling your story, that puts you all so far above and beyond so many of your male counterparts out here. Words can't describe. So I applaud you for that. I really do. I applaud you. And,
Thank you.
You know, it was a good show tonight because you brought something so different. And I like the fact that, Mr. Harshaw, you took us to a place that a lot of us know nothing about. I mean, we see the movies, the Scarface and the mob movies and all of this and different movies, but it means something different when it's something that's inspired by real-life experiences. It adds a different twist to things. And I had no idea that you had been incarcerated. That's a story within itself. So,
oh, yeah.
Again,
you know, I'm sure that you could come back and talk about that ordeal in itself. And Tina Hobson in the chat room, she writes, "Hello, my name is The Real Me." She has a little sticker that she found that says, "Hello, my name is The Real Me." And that's it. It's about being real.
That's right.
Is about being real. Arlene Spann writes, "Mr. Harshaw," hold on a second. "Mr. Harshaw, in his book, he read that someone said, 'I feel your pain.' That statement helped me to know at times others do feel our pain. That's why we must keep each other lifted up in prayer. Thanks," from Arlene Spann. She also writes that, "What have you done to help someone else unconditionally?" She's asking a question to all of the listeners. What have you done? And what have you done to help someone unconditionally? Everyone should go to the mirror and talk to the person that they see and ask that question.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a giving person. And like mm-hmm. I say, when a person purchased my book, you know, we take a proceeds of that, and it goes to the Sickle Cell Foundation for the kids, because my grandbaby has sickle cell. And we also give, you know, a proceeds to the Leukemia Foundation, because my little niece had, you know, just overcame leukemia, you know. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, try to steal my son's head as well, so he don't turn out like me, because my main thing is to make sure my seed don't turn out like me and go to prison like me, you know.
Right.
I also try to get a word to the kids on the streets. When I see them doing something, I laugh with them. "Man, what y'all over there doing?" or whatever the case may be. But I also throw something in the air, like, you know, your ass don't get in trouble, you know. So I try to help. I try to help as much as I can, you know. Even somebody, you know, I know a bum on the street who wants some money just so he can go get high. You know, I'm not gonna give you that money so you can go get high. Now, if you want something to eat, now we can go across the street. Now I go over here and get the food for you. You know what I mean? I have no problem.
Right.
I have no problem going to the schools to talk to the kids to show them, you know, that prison ain't all what it's cracked up to be. You don't want to go to prison and have to come home and catch up. Now you behind 10 years, 13 years. You behind. You don't know what's going on. I hated when I came home and I sat in my friend's car, and I had told him, "Man, I'm not trying to be funny or nothing, but my ass is hot. I don't know why, but it is." And he told me, "I need to cut the heat off the seat. I didn't know they had heat in the seat." You know, so all this is a throwback. You behind so far. Now you got to force yourself to catch up. And if you don't catch up, you're not strong enough. You'll mess around and do something stupid. Now you're on your B prefix going back to prison, and your family looking like, "Damn, he done went back for what?" But a lot of people don't know your condition. They don't know you can't get a job. They don't know that you won't have nobody to help you to get here, to get there. They don't know you're getting frustrated and you mad, and that's why you drinking this or smoking that. So, you know, everybody goes to everybody. So it's just our job to be like, "Man, don't worry about it. You know, God going to bless you, man, just like he going to bless me. We just got to be strong in some form or some fashion."
Right. And that's so true. That is so true. And I tell you, we're still going strong in the chat room. Marcella D. Moore writes, "Before you make the wrong move, make the right move and stay home. Real talk," by Keith Davis. They're just, oh my goodness, let me see. I'm just moving right along here. Keith B. Davis and Daniel Harshaw, thank you, thank you, thank you, from Tina Hobson.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you also.
I'm just scrolling down a list at this point. Arlene Spann writes, "It's great to know that men keep journals too. Thanks for sharing that." Yeah, I have to pull up the rear on that one, because that was, again, something new. Wow, men do journals too. Very good to know. Great knowledge. Tina Hobson, she writes again. She put up a banner, "Keeping it real." You know, you've really gotten your words out. And, again, to all the listeners, this is what can happen when we have cerebral, respectful conversations. So many times we go in, this is for my sisters, you know, we can get loud and we can go in and
want to try to argue over everything instead of sitting still and listening. And I know that I don't remember which one of you had said it, but you said that women like to have men listen to them. But I've learned that men love a woman who's silent and listens to what they have to say too. Men like when a woman shows interest in how their day really was. You know, what happened at work today? How did you do things? You know, how do you feel? And if you have something to talk about, you know, sit still, be silent and listen. And Deirdre Harshaw says, if I can just help one person, I have done something. Whether it is a smile or a word for thought, always give a helping hand. We are here for everyone. And let me just click the like button on that one. And that's so true. That's so true. If we can help one person, then our job is well done. And, you know, I'm sure that you meet with opposition and some of your homeboys and maybe some of your homegirls or people or family members have probably told you, what the hell are you doing this for? Nobody wants to hear that. Why are you doing this? Or somebody may say, man, you a punk. What you putting that out there for? And blah, blah, blah. But I tell you what, coming from a real girly girl, 1,010% girly girl, woman, lady, again, that's what we look for in a real man. A man that can stand up for what he believes in and share his story and not care.
Yeah.
Who wants
you
him to be silent?
Have to not care. You have to not care at all. Because I know I never thought I'd write a book. I never thought I'd write and then I wrote 9 books. I never thought I'd write the other 3 that I didn't finish. I also never thought that I'd be doing open mic. I also never thought I'd be talking to kids. I also never thought that I'd be acting and had to dress up like a police officer. I never thought. You know, so my view on the world is changed.
Mhm. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. That's great. It's always about moving and evolving in your life because everybody has to. You can't stay the same. You can't stay the same. People always talk about what they used to do or who they used to be. Exactly. The word used to do. You used mm-hmm. to do that thing. You're not that person no more. You evolve. You got to evolve. You know, move on and move on with your life. Find something that's, like I heard Steve Harvey say, what is your gift to the world?
Exactly.
If you ask anybody on the street what is your gift, they have no clue. They have no clue what you're supposed to do in your life. A lot of people think they're just supposed to just live until they die and not do nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And I refuse to believe that. I refuse to believe that you're just here just to be here.
Right.
You know, you live and you die. Know what your purpose is in life. Find out. At least be sober enough to find yourself. Because a lot of people don't, they listen to other noise and let other people tell them what your purpose is. Sometimes you need to sit in a room, keep the lights off, and just think, what is my purpose? Pray to God. What is my purpose? What am I here for? What is my purpose?
Right.
Eventually you'll find it. You'll find it.
You're right, because you will find it. Like, I never knew that prison was the best school that I ever been to. And it's sad to say, but it was. Because if I had never been to prison, it would have killed me. I'd have died
mm-hmm.
on the street. I got no education. I would have never learned who I was and, you know, where I stand at. I probably would have never got married. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like I said, prison was the best school for me. I learned so much. I also obtained my education in there. You know, I remember I was trying to read a book. I was like, oh, I'm going to learn how to read, you know, so I don't have to run from conversations. So I asked the gentleman, let me get a book to read, and I got the book, and it was a little bit outside my league, dealing with philosophy and all this. I didn't understand nothing, and a guy started giving me 5 words a week. He was
mm-hmm.
like, give me these 5 words, spell them, and know the definition. And after that, I started doing that, and I went from reading, buying 5 books to Farrakhan to Elijah Muhammad to Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, on up, I got to going. And reading is so fun. And it was a time I used to run from that. I used to run from conversations because I didn't want to have one because I always thought that I was a dummy. But like you say, words carry power. So if you listen to them words, you are going to be what you think that is. But if you can outshine that word, then you're not going to be dumb. If you can outshine that word, you can be who you want to.
Right. It's so true. And to all of our callers, this is what I call the prayer flower now. I believe they did it, and I can't think of the name of the movie right now, but when everyone touches someone else's shoulder, this is our time. Press the number 1 on your phone. Call in 646-478-4726 and leave some words of encouragement for our guest. If you have some words of encouragement you would like to leave to our guest, or you'd just like to say thank you for being so transparent, now is the time for you to press the number 1 on your phone. Give us a call, 646-478-4726, or leave your comment in the chat room, and I'll read it on air for you. But you know what? Each night I always say at the end of my show to remember to pray it and pay it forward. But as I shared yesterday, a young lady who was an icon and encouraging young ladies of a darker skin tone to love the skin that they were in, she committed suicide. Things got too hard for her, and depression got the best of her. And I always say, you know what? It's great for you to sit here and listen to the person who's bringing you the positive message, but we like to hear the positive reinforcement as well. So if you'd like to leave our guest the message, now is the time for you to do it. Press the number 1 on your phone, and I'll bring you on air. Or if you're in the events chat room, feel free to type out your message, and I'll read it on air. Or for the guests in the show chat room, you have to be logged on with a screen name in order to interact there. So give us a call, 646-478-4726. I am going. I see there's a lot of people here in the call query, so feel free to press the number 1 if you'd like to leave a positive word for our guest. But I can tell you all from the bottom of my heart that you shared some things that have enlightened me and opened my eyes even further. And for that, I thank you. And Arlene Spann writes, just heard one of the gentlemen say, know your purpose in life. She says, that is so true. And Tina Hobson, once again, she's put up a large banner that says, live on purpose. Live on purpose. So again, gentlemen, I just want to tell you that this has been a blessed show for me. Each week, I am so fascinated and still in shock and awe every week because it seems like my shows get better and better. And it's not because it's my show. I would listen to this show even if it was not mine because of people like you. You make this show happen. And no matter how many times people send me my kudos and accolades, for me, it's all about you. This is what this show is about. Giving us that venue where we can spread our word to the masses. And you said some mighty things this evening. You shared so much. And I hope that you know that the listeners who were very active, they thoroughly enjoyed hearing your words. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have about 10 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to be on air, to leave some words of encouragement for our guests, feel free, press the number 1, 646-478-4726. Arlene Spann writes, thank you to both of the gentlemen for their stories and openness and your words of encouragement. And that's from Arlene Spann. She's over in the Facebook chat room. Tina Hobson, let's see. She's written something as well. Ah, she'd like for you both to come over. She says that we need Keith Davis and Danielle Harshaw as part of the Marathon of Hope Kingdom Movement. This is a mighty worldwide movement that we are officially kicking off on June 6th through the 8th. It is a virtual movement because we are literally being broadcast all over the world. And our kickoff is June 6th through the 8th, that weekend, but this is a continuing project and movement. And Tina Hobson would like for you all to join us on the Facebook group Marathon of Hope Kingdom Movement. She is inviting you both to join us there. It's a mighty movement, and we do need to add male speakers to our speakers query at this time. And we would love to have you because you have a story to tell, and the world is ready and waiting to hear it. So let me come back over here. We have caller 3412, is that 3412, caller 3412. Welcome, welcome.
Now, you know who 3412 is.
You know what? You notice I hesitated. You notice I hesitated because there's like a million calls here in the query, and some numbers are either identical, the last four are identical, or they're a little bit screwed up, maybe one number off or something. So I had to think for a minute. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's her.
Well, yes, it is. First of all, I don't want to apologize because it was beyond my control. I've been very, very busy today. So I was late getting into the Facebook chat room. However, I was on the call. I was on the call. There was a lot of background noise, so I kept myself muted. But I heard a lot, and I heard basically what I needed to hear tonight from both Keith and Daniel. And as a part of the Marathon of Hope Kingdom Movement, I just felt the need to personally invite you to be a part of our movement. It's not just about women. It's not just about men. It's about the kingdom. And what I heard tonight was a kingdom connection between the two of you and the women that are presently a part of this movement. That is our goal is to help heal the hurting women, the masses, to reach the masses of men and women who sometimes don't even know that they're hurting.
Yep.
You know, it's only through conversations like the ones that I've heard tonight that can sometimes bring about revelation, because it's really, really sad when you don't know that you don't know. You
right.
know, but sometimes through hearing somebody else, especially strong, strong brothers as you two, a lot of revelation can be obtained. And the women need to hear your perspective. And I'm going to make a concerted effort to invite more men to become guests or just, you know, to join in and listen on that weekend, those 72 hours of kingdom connections. To help us realize or help us to understand each other a lot better. This is a mighty, mighty movement. Both of you brothers are mighty, mighty men of God. I appreciate you. I honor you. I lift you up in prayer. And my prayer is that you will join us in June for the Marathon of Hope Kingdom Movement. Thank you.
Thank you
for inviting us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, we're all stepping into our time. This is our destiny. This is our moment. This is our time. If you're not used to being keynote speakers, you're about to learn really quickly here because the world is waiting, and the world
Absolutely.
Needs to hear what you have to say. And this is a mighty movement. This is a mighty movement. Even this show will be going up in our on-demand section for those people. so that they can hear it during that weekend and beyond. I'm developing a whole website and page for just that, so that people will be able to come back and hear all of our speakers. So we would love to have you. Just so that you know, Mr. Harshaw, my co-host tonight, Tina, you've been fired. D. Harshaw, she's been on it all night. She's already over there.
Happened.
On the marathon of Kingdom Movement. She's already gotten over there on the page. So she's on top of things. Yes, she is. And next week, of course, we'll still be bringing some more of the people in this publication family. So, again, gentlemen, this has been such a wonderful, wonderful program. I do believe that we have some more comments. Facebook seems to be giving me a fit this evening, but I'm going to try to see if I can find them. I see that people have made comments. Now I have to find them. And but I can tell you this, a lot of people are saying thank you. Thank you. Deidre Harshaw, she says, thank you, Arthur Keith Davis and Daniel Harshaw. Marcella D. Moore, the Healing Through Hurt Book Club, always a blessing to hear real men who know who they are talk from the heart. Real men cause things around them to shift, change and transform. I encourage you both to continue to tell your stories, because not only will they bless others, but they will bless you as well. On behalf of the ladies, we salute you tonight. Peace and blessings. And Sister Marcella could not have said it better. On behalf of all of us, we salute you, we honor you, and we thank you for sharing this evening. We really do. Words can't describe it, of just how powerful this show has been. So, oh my goodness, yes, I just want to thank you all. And D. Harshaw, she says, I'm there. Tina, I'm with you, LOL. So, oh my goodness, I tell you, it has been fun. It has been enlightening. It has been empowering. And for all of our guests who will listen to this show after it archives, you're in for such a treat. Get involved. Support these gentlemen. Get their books. Spread the word. But as always, we have about a minute left. As always, I pray each and every one of you enough. I pray you enough sunshine to brighten your rainy days. I also pray you enough rain to make your gardens grow beautifully. And I pray you enough smiles to turn that frown you've been carrying around upside down. But most of all, and I'm sure on behalf of all of my guests and my panelists, pray you enough strength and courage to face whatever may be coming your way this week and beyond. Thank you so much for joining me here tonight on Healing Through Hurt iTalk Radio. I am C. Maria Wall, and tonight my special guests have been authors Keith B. Davis and Daniel Harshaw. Again, this has been such a blessed show. Before we go, as always, I'd like to remind each and every one of you to do what? Pay it
and pray it forward.
Pray it forward. So until next time, be well, be blessed. Thank you for being here. Thank you, gentlemen. We salute you. We honor you.
Thank you.
And this has been an absolute blessing. So until next time, be well, be blessed. I will see you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, pretty baby, since you left me, I have been feeling oh so blue. I always thought that you would love me. I don't know what I should do. Do do ba ba da do da do do ba ba da do 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 ba ba da do da. I don't know what I should do. I always thought that you would love me. I always thought that you'd be true. And now I'm sadly feeling lonely. I don't know what I